This is American Fashion Podcast. I'm Charles Beckwith, and my guest today is Marika Khan, who is a new designer, and she has gotten interested in 3D printing of knitwear, which is 3D knitting machines. Yeah. Hi, Marika. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Now, your first name is spelled like people abbreviate America when they're saying, hell yeah.
Yes, there's a lot of hashtag Marika on 4th of July.
Okay. Okay, so what got you into 3D knitting? I mean, I thought all knitting is 3D because it's never flat, right?
Well, no. Typical manufacturing of knitting is done on a flatbed knitting machine. So basically, you do have to still link, say, front and back pieces together or components of the garment.
Okay, so this is one of these whole garment machines that actually spits out a finished garment.
Exactly, yes. It's okay. Actually seamless.
Wow. Okay, so what's the learning curve on something like that? How long did it take you to figure out what to do?
Honestly, I am working very closely with the Brooklyn Fashion and Design Accelerator right now.
Okay.
So they have, which is how I came across the 3D knitting, these machines, which are from a company called Shimaseki.
Yeah.
They're a Japanese company, and they have a USA office, and it's
right
in New York.
Based over in New Jersey.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, actually, the one I visit is in... they're just their corporate office.
Oh, yeah.
I've never been to the manufacturing plant in Jersey because I use the one at the Brooklyn Fashion Design Accelerator.
Yeah.
Because they're so great with working.
They do assemble them here in the United States.
Yes.
So it's a Japanese company, but they're making these knitting machines here, which is fantastic.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's very cool.
A lot of the technology that we have for making clothing, it's been outsourced, so not only do we not make the clothing, we don't make the things that make the clothing anymore.
Correct.
So it's great that some of that is back here in that form, especially something that's kind of this high tech.
Yeah.
I'm always amazed by knitwear because the designer has to have such a complex shape in their mind, and they have to do all the math of where things line up. The computer helps a lot, obviously.
Yes, and I am still learning. My expertise is more in cut and sew fashion. So I always wanted to start a company, and it wasn't until the last few years that I realized, well, I really love knitwear, and my focus is always being comfortable when I wake up in the morning, wherever I'm going, whatever I'm doing.
Yeah.
And so it just made sense. And after a long journey, I finally came across the Brooklyn Fashion and Design Accelerator, and they were able to help me focus. And I was really impressed by these 3D knitting machines, and I thought it was such a cool concept. And a lot of people are not really using these machines, so I thought it was a great place to, you know, start a business and learn as I go.
So what kind of materials do these machines use? Is it all just sheep wool, or can you put other textiles?
No, you can put all different types of yarns in there. So
okay.
Currently I'm using 100% merino wool because I know it's a very low impact fabric, and I'm working with a great mill in Italy they are very sustainable and very old school, and they really care about what they're doing. But I'm also looking into recycled yarns.
Okay.
So
that's a thing?
Yes. It's crazy. They have yarns that are made from plastic water bottles and cotton. And that is my main focus right now. So I'm trying to source that currently, because my goal is to become, you know, 100% sustainable.
We put a lot of cotton in their landfills.
Yes.
People throw cotton away like it's nothing, and it does have an impact because there's just so much of it.
Yeah, the landfills are really filling up quickly, and it's a serious problem, of course, because of fast fashion. And it wasn't until, you know, very recently, and like I think I want to say the 70s, early 70s, that all the manufacturing started to become outsourced. And with the...
Not all. We still do some
of it. Yes, we still. Luckily, it's finally coming back. Yeah, in a very strong way, I think. Which is interesting because when I first started Nia, I...
No, that's your brand name.
Yes.
And N-I-A?
N-I-A, yes. It's actually my first name.
Okay.
But I go by my middle name, which is Marika.
And your website is shopneaclothing.com?
Yes. It's okay. Currently under construction. I'm switching around from two different platforms. So it's in limbo a little bit right now. But you can find also, information on Kickstarter.
That's also your Instagram is shopneaclothing.com.
Yes, my Instagram is shopneaclothing.
Shopneaclothing, not .com, but shopneaclothing on Instagram. I looked at it. You have some cool stuff up there. Is all of the knitwear that's shown on your Instagram from things you've designed, or you're
not
kind of throwing
all of it.
In inspiration?
No, I have right now currently three pieces. I have a cropped pant, a tank top, and a choker necklace. But I do a lot of, you know, inspo posts from that I find, say, any website or Pinterest, but then I'll make sure to say reposted from, and you know, just keeping people engaged who are, you know, really following what I'm doing and are interacting with me and who believe in, you know, the story of Nia and how it came to be.
Well, there's only three pieces. The story can't be long.
Yes.
But what kind of effort have you had to put in to get to this point?
Oh,
what was required to get to, I have three pieces available for sale?
Just those three pieces, it took me a little over a year to develop.
Okay.
Yes, because the 3D knitting is so new to me. Starting a business in itself is so new to me. There are so many steps that, you know, you have to take slowly and figure out and kind of decide what's right and go from there. So, yeah, it's been a slow journey, but I think that's the focus of what I'm doing, is getting away from fast fashion and not doing taking the easy way and the cheapest way. I really wanted to design clothing that was made for comfort and quality and could be worn, you know, in many different scenarios throughout the day.
Yeah. Usually when I think of knitwear, I think of winter clothing, but you can definitely have summer knitwear. It's great in the summer.
Yeah, definitely. Currently, I only have styles that are geared towards fall right now, which is, you know, what I started out with. So I would say these can be a little bit versatile, but are leaning towards the colder weather.
So how are these available? You're doing a Kickstarter?
Yes. So I launched on Kickstarter.
Okay.
And the funding from that was going towards the production of these garments at the Brooklyn Fashion and Design Accelerator.
Okay.
So I had funded all the product development myself and paying for the packaging and the labeling. So all of that was production ready, but because I put all my funding into the development portion of it, I needed the funds for the production side of things.
Now, did you realize that you would run out of money?
I did.
You did? Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, going back to a little earlier in the story, I had, you know, tried to start this company and didn't really know where I wanted to take it and was having trouble figuring it out and working with the right people. And I had came across Shannon Lohr's program, Factory 45. So basically she takes aspiring sustainable designers from zero to launch. And when I found her information, originally I was just worrying about making sure I'm making this in the U.S. I wasn't really focused on sustainable goods. But then after reading about what she's doing, I committed to, you know, that side of things as well, because it really is so important. And I had actually seen a documentary called The True Cost. I'm sure you've heard of it.
Yes. It's a good documentary.
Oh, it is. And it's super inspiring and very enlightening. I think there's so much good information out there that people really don't know, like the fact that the fashion industry is the second biggest polluter of water right behind the oil industry, and that, you know, the fast fashion, these clothes that are being designed to be worn once and thrown in a landfill, is just killing our environment. But so, sorry, I got a little distracted where we started with this question.
Well, I was asking if you expected the requirements financially be as great as they always seem to turn out to be.
Yeah, so I guess getting back to...
You've been in the fashion business before? Or
yeah. Well,
You currently have a day job in the fashion business?
Yes, okay. Exactly. I work full-time in the fashion industry on the production side of things, doing things like care testing and labeling and trim approvals and fabric quality and looking at this stuff all day long, but not from, say, a fast fashion business per se, but a business that's not fully focused on, you know, sustainable facets of the industry.
It's interesting that when people say sustainability or hear sustainability, they often think of ecological. Mm-hmm. But as my friend Patrick Duffy pointed out quite some time ago, that sustainability actually has three legs, where it's social, mm-hmm. ecological, and financial.
Yes.
So a sustainable business has to be ecologically sustainable with the people that it works with and hires and with its customers, that whole ecosystem of a social thing around a business. And then it also has to be able to sustain itself financially in the long term. It has to continue to exist. So that is a part of sustainability. So if you're with a company that doesn't quite do the ecological yet and maybe hasn't figured out how to take care of their employees or their customers, maybe they're really focused on one leg of sustainability, staying in business, which is tough. Yes. I mean, the fashion business is a rough business.
Yeah, definitely. Especially right now, you know, every week you hear about these companies, you know, filing for bankruptcy. And I think through social media and these platforms that finally smaller designers and entrepreneurs are actually having a chance to focus on, as you say, these three legs of the business and, you know, do things the right way. And I think there's been a real disruption to the industry, but as well as, you know, always negatives, there's always positives to that. So for myself, having Shannon Lohr of Factory 5 as a mentor, she helped guide me, as well as my peers in the program, that, you know, Kickstarter is a great platform because you can figure out your market without, you know, because Kickstarter is all or nothing. So if I hadn't reached my goal, it would have said to me, okay, you know what, you need to relook at this or whatever point of pain seemed to not be working with these customers.
Yeah.
So getting to that point of Kickstarter, I did know that I wasn't going to have the funding for production, but I believe in what I was doing. I was getting great feedback. So I went ahead and, you know, spent the money and here I am now. So I am in the midst of finishing up my first production run, which should be ready August 15th. And then my customers will be getting their first shipment of their Nia knitwear. So, I mean, every day I am looking at this, like, how will I grow from here? And I think, although I was successful on Kickstarter, I learned so many things that I could have done differently and had improved. And I think I got very excited and used to the typical way of doing things, which is like get things to market and go, go, go and figure it out on the back end. But with what I'm doing, that's not the right way to do it. And I really need to look at how can I grow now? And that's sort of where I'm at this point.
There's a lot of demands on a designer of a clothing line. How are you dealing with balancing all of the different aspects of it?
Well, I cry a lot. no, but I do so much research and I feel very lucky to have these positive influences right at my fingertips in Brooklyn at the Brooklyn Fashion Design Accelerator with, you know, the social media people there and the knitwear production lab people there and who are able to give me some guidance. And even, you know, the head there, Deb Johnson, I was connecting with her very much and they do tons of events for entrepreneurs, which, you know, help connect me with others in the industry who are trying to do what I'm doing and are at similar points in the process. And it's a great connection, I think. And then there is so much information out there that, you know, many years ago you had to go to school to get an education to proceed to start a business, whereas now you can sort of, you know, not that you don't need that education, but you could do it on your own and be successful. So I think that's been really positive. Whenever I feel, you know, like overwhelmed, I look to these people and my peers and sort of talk with them and get their feedback. And what do they think? And I think it helps to...
What kind of feedback have you gotten? What things have been said to you or that you've learned over Kickstarter that have changed your direction?
Definitely understanding that just because something is made of quality or like say sustainability or sustainably does not mean that the market needs that. So I think that was my biggest takeaway is that I need to focus on ideas that are not really out there yet. I need to be market friendly, but also come with new innovative ideas. So just because I'm using 3D knitting machines doesn't mean everybody wants, you know, that garment. It still has to work for people and their everyday needs. So I think that my biggest takeaway was I need to focus more on the design side of things and not just, you know, marketing the brand and getting the word out there, but really educating myself of, you know, the full 360 of this fashion business and just being able to take in everything that I can right now. So I'm, you know, of course, working full time and trying to soak in everything that I can there. And, you know, problems that we run into at work, how can I prevent that from happening, you know, say in the future in my own business? But yeah, I think also trusting the process a little bit and not rushing it is huge. Like if I get nervous about something or overwhelmed, talking to people and just hearing them say, you know what, just take a step back and you're doing all you can right now. And I think that's huge, is understanding that you can only grasp what is in your reach and taking things slowly.
Okay. So once you finish the Kickstarter, how much have you raised so far on Kickstarter?
Are
you close to your goal?
Yeah, I raised 12,000 and I think 400, and my goal was 12,000.
Okay.
So I just made it.
Oh, so it is actually ended now?
Yes, it was completed in May. So it was successful and I got my funding, so I was able to start the production.
Okay, so when you said August, that you weren't talking about the funding will arrive in August.
No, that's when the actual garments will be ready.
Oh, okay. So you're in full swing of production.
Yes. Yes, okay. Almost done now, actually, just waiting for hang tags and labels to be added and finishing up. Just there's only one garment that has trim, which is elastic. Everything else is just made from the 100% merino wool yarns.
At the Brooklyn Fashion and Design Accelerator, they have the machine, but is it just a lab machine, or are you actually doing your production run on their machine?
I'm doing my production run on their machines right
now.
Okay. Yeah. Which is why they're such an amazing place, because they give someone like me access to be able to create a production run with only, say, 50 to 60 units of each piece. And, you know, if I need to reorder, being able to say, okay, I only need this many pieces, and you know, even if I just needed one piece, they'll put it on the machine for me and I can send that out to someone as needed.
Now, within their program, how long can you do that as an emerging designer who's associated with them? At what point will you have to leave Brooklyn Fashion Design Accelerator's resources when you outgrow them? Or will you have to leave at a certain point because you only get so much resources before they cut you off?
No, I'm not in their in-house program.
Okay.
I'm just working with their development and production lab.
Okay.
So I can work with them until, say, I start getting units that are too big for them to handle.
Okay.
Because their focus is, you know, small designers and designers who are just starting out. So if I had, say, all of a sudden 300 units, then I might have to go to, say, the Shimasaki manufacturing plant in New Jersey, because then they could handle something like that.
Yeah.
But they've really enhanced what I was able to do because they gave me the means. And it's super accessible because on my lunch breaks, I'll just run over there. I'm, you know, trying things on, reviewing patterns, you know, figuring out what needs to happen next and overseeing production here and there, being able to stop in when I need to discuss something and sit down with them. Which is, you know, huge because most of the time, say typical fashion businesses that are outsourcing, you'll have to wait to send something to them. They send something back. You approve it or reject it. Then you have to resend it out. And the communication, the timing is different. Like it's super hard to communicate. So this has been wonderful to have them and to help me get this idea that I've had off the ground.
Fantastic. Thanks for coming and talking to me.
Yes, definitely.
AmericanFashionPodcast.com is our website. AFPOD is our Twitter handle. And on Instagram, we are at American Fashion Show. There's a Be a Guest form on our website. You can also give us feedback through the website, through voicemail at 646-979-8709, or by writing to info@AmericanFashionPodcast.com. We occasionally do live events, and to get on the list for free tickets to our live shows, click the live show link also on our website. American Fashion Podcast is produced by the Fashion Media Center for Mouth Media Network. Listen to our sister shows, Fashion is Your Business, Material is Your Business, and Beauty is Your Business, also on Mouth Media Network. This and other episodes are copyrighted by Open Source Business Incorporated and Mouth Media Network Incorporated, all rights reserved. Subsist, friends, remain in force, keep making things beautiful, and keep listening. I'm Charles Beckwith, and we'll talk to you again next week.